This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are now live here on both Pet Life Radio and Ask Us Dr. Jeff here on Instagram Live. Here for you, here for your pets, you know, the grill. And I guess if you're here with me, that you remember, or your phones remember, to change the clocks. Those of you who are going to turn on in an hour and there's going to be, I won't be there, they're going to go, oh, I forgot. So, yeah, I mean, it used to be a big deal. Now everything's done automatically. So, you know, your phone does it automatically. My alarm clock does it automatically. In fact, I woke up this morning, it was like, I was stuck, it was like 6:30, and my dogs get me up early, and I get downstairs, and I saw my watch, I said, it's 6:30. I didn't change that. Well, anyway, sure enough, it was 7:30, so I'm pretty good. Hey, Steph, how you doing? So, I hope everybody is going to, I don't know, what do you think about this? It's kind of like better maybe in the fall when you have to, you know, come back and you add the extra hour of sleep, especially on a Sunday. I mean, who's going to complain about getting extra hour of sleep on a Sunday? So it's not so terrible. All right. So looking for your questions. Hello, JB. How are you doing? So when I saw another, my dog saw another doctor when you were away, being given with a giant raw red blotch. Where is it? Boy, send me a picture. Those things I need to know. That is pretty weird. There's only one. I only have one really relief doc, and she's pretty good. I don't know what kind of red blotch it would be. So send me a picture. Is it still there? Because I mean, I've been back now for a few weeks where no one's been there except me. So I'm curious to know. I love on stuff like that. And by the way, in general, if you're going to do air vet or any kind of telemedicine, or you're going to contact with your doctor, if your doctor is kind of crazy as I am and sends out, lets everybody have their cell phone, then it's great. I always tell people when they talk to me about, they're trying to describe something. And you could do, I mean, yes, you can describe it. You have an idea. But the best way for me, I say, you know, take 10, 15 seconds of video. Let me see that limp. Let me see what it looks like. Let me see the head shaking. Whatever it is so much more effective if I get to see it myself as opposed to someone trying to explain what it is. And that's hard to do sometimes. So half thought it's fungal cream and it gauze and it's healing. But thing is, if it was a fungal infection, that's not something that happens like right away. And it wouldn't happen in a day. It's kind of weird. I'd be good to see it. Because fungal infections take a while. By the time there's actually contact, to the time that you actually see a lesion, is more than, it takes several days. I'm just thinking, if it was a red blotch that wasn't there, maybe was a vaccine or an injection given, just trying to picture what it would be like. But take pics and when it comes up from under the bed, that's a good thing. Oh, and if polysporin didn't help, but a fungal cream worked, that does bode well for a fungal infection. So yeah, I would like to see it. Soothing dog stomach due administration, ursodiol. So, you know, and it's any kind of fiber. I'm worried, first of all, tell me when it says the ursodiol, what exactly is she experiencing? Okay. Is it a vomiting? Is it licking lips because of nausea? If you can as best describe the symptoms, and then we'll see if there's something we can do for that. It's what she did. She didn't give me notes. She didn't give me anything. She didn't give me any notes. It was, Jane, get a hold of me after the show, and I'll look up the file itself, because they have to write everything down in the file. So I'll take a look and see. By the way, this is one of the reasons, Jane, that I am under such threat of never retiring, because I've been told that I'm going to be killed if I retire. So licking your feet, yeah, we have to see. I mean, licking feet is allergy. And one thing that could start quickly, acutely, is if, for example, they have an allergic reaction to something and then they are licking all night long and all of a sudden you see this big blotchy area. So I'd like to see it. Could be just a hot spot. Yeah, so I have to see what's going on. So you can reach out to me and I'll take a look at the file. This is the first time I'm hearing it. Why didn't you call me right afterwards? It would have been a lot easier. But now, because I've been back for 2 weeks. So 375 milligram total, 5 dosages, dry heaving, lip licking. Now, certainly dry heaving, lip licking, that is nausea. So what I would do to start is maybe cut down some of the amount of ursodiol you're giving. And at the same time, we can give something that'll help stop the vomiting. So that's that. We can do that. could treat like a hospital as big as $500. I don't know why. So yeah, I don't know. I have to see. I don't know what it was. Sometimes if it's just a routine thing, you know, usually we give aftercare instructions when there's a surgery or something that anesthesia, something where you actually have to be involved. If it's just going home with medication and it says on the label, give X amount of times, you know, twice a day, well, three times a day, once a day, whatever, you know, that's really all you need to give out. When it comes to after visit instructions, that's because there are things you continually need to do at home. And that's usually after a surgery or a procedure. All right, let's see. Okay, I'd have to see. If it was shaved hair, then there must have been something found on the physical, and that's why that happened. Hello, Kimmy. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you, because I had a big discussion, sort of a philosophical discussion with one of my colleagues, and I'm just curious to know what you think. And we were talking about some of the problems that we have with certain breeds. For example, right now, and we see this, by the way, anytime a breed becomes very, very popular, we see this. And I mean popular quickly. Perfect example, the French Bulldog. And again, I know I've seen tons of Frenchies. Let's put it this way. A lot of them are not in great health or have a lot of problems. And the question is, you know, how did this happen? How did we go from a great dog? By the way, I'm on my fourth right now. And I've always had really good ones, very few problems. I mean, certainly there's some problems that any French Bulldog will have with their spine, their back, but the ones with all the skin diseases and the fold, the pyodermis, the infections, and the back problems, et cetera. And what is going on? My theory is that what happens is, hey, Todd, is that dogs get really popular too fast. There are a number of kinds of breeders out there. There is the legitimate breeder. These are the breeders that are educated, that know to take breaks in between heats. Don't breed a female, run right after another. You got to wait at least a heat or two in between. Breeders that know what to look for in which dogs they're breeding, so they can breed out any of the bad traits they may have experienced. Breeders that know the vaccine schedules, know how they should be caring for their puppies pre-administering, pre-selling them or whatever they're going to do. Then you have the breeders that are trying to take advantage of the pet's popularity, the breed's popularity, and they're throwing dogs out there really fast. We call that backyard breeders, where you see in puppy mills, pet shops, well, the old pet shop, we don't have those anymore, which is a good thing. And that's, I think, kind of what's going on. I'm curious to know what you think, but that is the issue. And you know what I also noticed a lot? It's a dog that seems to get popular every time the movie shows, or one of the derivatives of the movie, the 101 Dalmatians. And they, you know, you look at those in the movie, go see, rent the movie. You'll see why. They are so cute and they're adorable and they have personality. And anyway, it is just basically something we're seeing, and everyone wants to run out and get a Dalmatian. Then with the demand increasing, those that should not be breeding are breeding, and then the quality of the dog really starts to go down. And that's why within 6 or 8 or months or 10 months after one of these movies becomes popular, the shelters and the rescues are loaded with them, because people are buying them impulse. People are buying dogs or getting dogs that probably shouldn't get that kind of breed. They don't do the homework. They don't really know what's going on inside, how likely that breed is going to be successful in your home, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what's, I think, ruining these breeds. Now I'm concerned about the Frenchie, because there are so, and I've had them on my show, and I've had them on Instagram, some beautiful, beautiful, adorable Frenchies, sometimes little puppies that were abandoned, that were given up, that were, as they say, dumped. And the breeders just didn't know what to do, didn't know how to handle them. And that's what happened. So it's sad. It really is. I mean, the good news for someone who really wants a dog, like a French Bulldog, and doesn't want to pay thousands and thousands, they are so many available, unfortunately, in rescues, pet rescues, and shelters. It shouldn't be like this. It should be that if you really want a good dog, you're able to find the right breeder. And that's why many of us are saying, you know what? For the breeders even, slow down, stop for a sec. Let's give homes to these really, really good dogs that don't have any because of irresponsible breeding. So that's my soapbox. Hold on, Bean is a Maltipoo, 10 years old, 10 pounds. Okay, turkey and brown rice should be okay. LA Pet Care, how you doing? We get it. There are so many, many. I see it all the time. 100% I see it all the time. In contrast, however, maybe because of popularity and because of the long term, long range, you have a Labrador Retriever. Now, first of all, Labradors, and I'm on my seventh lab right now, they are very sturdy, hardy dogs. And I don't usually see a lot of bad traits, certainly hip dysplasia. That is, we know, 50% genetic. So that could be a problem. Fragmented coronoids, we see that in Labradors. But Labs are usually pretty sturdy, healthy dogs. So even though there may be some poor breeding out there, you don't notice it. But because of the popularity and the fact that it is a big dog, and it is a headstrong dog and a strong dog, there are a lot of people that probably shouldn't have gotten a Labrador. Either they didn't have the time, they don't have the space for it. Labs need some space. And therefore, ultimately, there were some behavior issues. I mean, let's face it. There are only two major reasons why these animals end up in shelters and rescues. It's either behavior, right, is, you know, kind of a big one, actually. And, you know, maybe a time commitment on the owner. Those are the issues. And health problems. And this is the one cautious note about rescuing. When you rescue a dog from a shelter, from a breed rescue, you really don't know always what you're getting into. Even when you go to a shelter and the people that have relinquished this dog to the shelter, right, have to fill out a form, it's glorified. They're removing something. It doesn't say because I've spent thousands of dollars to the doctor and nobody can figure anything out. No, that you won't hear. But you can always hear seemingly legitimate reasons. And it was like, oh my God, it was so difficult. Or my child is allergic to it. Or the dog is great. Ah, another thing you're always going to find out, if you go to a rescue or a shelter, mostly shelters, and they tell you this really cute, fun dog that you're about to adopt is 2 years old, it's probably 4 or 5 years old. So make sure at least that you take the dog, like you should always have the dog checked by your vet. But even still, if it's a 1 or 2 year difference, that's okay. I've had some dogs that live longer than they should have. I've had some dogs in the past that didn't live as long as I thought they should have. There's no predictability. Elchanan, how you doing? So Elchanan is one of my former technicians, went on to vet school. He's now about to enter, I think, his third year. And that's great. He's loving it. And I actually, one of my other techs, volunteers actually, from UCLA, just sent a note to me that she just got into Pennsylvania. And she starts in the fall. And that will be my fifth of literally in vet school now. I have two at Midwestern in Arizona. I have one at Davis, one at Cornell, and now one at Penn. And I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And I have others I know that are still waiting to hear that will get into vet school. So that's great. Labradoodle. Oh, that's another thing. It's funny. I just came from a Western veterinary conference, and a lot of the veterinarians there, a lot of the ones that have like a very big presence on Instagram, et cetera, they're always joking about the doodles. And they're very popular. I mean, there's Berner doodles, right, for Bernese mountain dogs. There's St. Bernard doodles. I told you, I did one on Irish setter doodle, which didn't even look like a labradoodle or a golden doodle. Look, I had one of the first labradoodles way, way back. And he was amazing. My daughter has a gorgeous golden doodle. They make really good crosses. And, you know, sometimes you're lucky enough to get the good of each of the breeds. Of course, you're going to get hair in the ears because the poodles. But overall, I found them to be, you know, pretty hardy dogs. And they're so popular. They oftentimes don't shed as much because the poodle part. But it's almost like, what's next? Meanwhile, what was the first doodle cross? And we're going back since I graduated vet school over 40, 50 years ago. Nobody raised an eyebrow. It is what it is. Or now I should say it was what it was. Any idea? What do you think? What was the first popular poodle cross? I'm going to wait. Before I say, I want to hear what you have to think. Got to think back. And it was very, very popular. So let's see. While you guys are thinking, we're going to take a quick break here. For Pet Life Radio, they have to do their commercial break, and we'll be back. I'll stay here on the show in a minute. So, oh, wow, you see, look at that. The LA Pet Care, two former employees that are in process of becoming veterinarians. Hey, look, it's great. I'm telling you, but we'll talk about that. When we get back, I want to talk about something else that I see a lot of, and it's a trend. I don't think it's a good trend, but it's a trend. We'll be right back.
Real people. Real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hey, we're back here live. So the answer was cockapoo. And that's true. And so many people had a cockapoo. And nobody thought twice about it. So yes, that was a famous poodle cross with a cocker spaniel. Now, one of the things I also wanted to talk about that we're seeing, you know, changes is talking about veterinarians, young technicians, mostly volunteers. They all started with me, volunteers from local colleges, Northridge, UCLA. And, you know, they were thinking about it. This Wednesday, I'm going back to my high school. Beverly Hills High. Every year they put on a really, really well-developed, well-attended program that is Career Day. And they have over 100 representatives from different careers representing these careers, giving lectures to students. And the students sign up based on what their current interests are. As we know, in high school, how many of you really, really knew what you wanted to do when you're in high school? Well, I did. I knew when I was in kindergarten, but that's a rarity. But most people in high school, they don't know. They see these things. They want to be influencers. Well, good luck on that one. So I find is that you really need to have the passion. And I think there's a difference. And I see it in veterinary medicine, and I shoot me if it offends you. But there's a difference between when I do what I do, mine is a career. It's a career. It's a profession. It's passion. It's not a job. There are a lot of young veterinarians here that are graduating, and this is just a job. They like animals, but it's a job. There's no heart. There's no passion. They go to work for these big corporate practices, and I've told this story before, of making decisions or being forced to make decisions, forced by your employer, which are these large corporate practices, because of profit. And they'll tell me. They get frustrated. They won't let them work with rescues. They won't let them work with shelter adoptions. They don't give the breaks. They don't have someone come in who really needs help, and they can't discount. No, they say no discount. No discounting for seniors. No discounting for physically handicapped. I mean, it just bugs the crap out of me. And as I say, we have to take this veterinarian's oath. I would say we have to, but it does. So, and the veterinarian oath talks about how we do need to help relieve animal suffering. We need to take care not only of the animals, but mankind, by the owners too. We need to provide service. But it doesn't say at all. I looked again and again and again, no fine print, how much money we have to make. So that really is what it boils down to. When these corporate practices take over, I mean, I'll be real honest with you. When I sold to VCA, and VCA had already sold out to Mars, I thought, you know what? Mars, families, candy, kids, that'll be an improvement. Guess what? Not a chance. They didn't become the sixth largest privately held company in the world because they have a heart. No. They want to make money. They're investors. It's a family-owned business. They don't care about the investors, really. And yet, that's all they really care about. So, you know, it is so frustrating for me to see. And I just talked to a colleague of mine, a friend, who used to volunteer with me, as a matter of fact. He's now a veterinary specialist, radiation oncologist. He works for VCA. And even he is so frustrated that they make him charge just ridiculous for radiation. Now, understand, yes, the equipment when you buy for radiation oncology, very expensive. It's millions of dollars worth of equipment. But some of these protocols require multiple treatments. They have to quote. He says every time he says it, it like hurts him. $20,000 for a course of treatment. $20,000. That's insane. And I really said, and I feel so strongly about it. And my dad had a saying that for me, it rings true 100%. And that is, if you sell to the masses, you will eat with the classes. But if you sell to the classes, you will eat with the masses. Now, let's turn around for a second. Let's look down Beverly Hills. Where's Bullock's Wilshire? What's happening to Saks Fifth Avenue? Magnans and iMagnans, right? Where are they? But are Target still around? Are Walmart's still around? Yeah, they are. Selling to the masses. When you price yourself so high that people can't afford, who's losing out? Well, of course, number one, the pet's losing out. People are avoiding treatments simply because they can't afford it. And of course, the client, the pet parents are losing out because now they can't take care of their pets. Or what you can do is have a different pricing structure, make it affordable or at least a little better, and then more people will be able to come and have their pets treated, and that's how you make your profit. Smaller profits per case, but you see a lot more cases. Sell to the masses. So anyway, it really is frustrating. I'm seeing it all the time. The good news for me is that I get to practice, and my joy is not like, I don't get satisfaction of, you know, sending someone out the door for $1,000. No, I'd rather send them out the door for $500 and see four of them. And that's exactly the difference. So, you know, it's not the fault of the veterinarian. I really don't think so. I think it's the fault of the jobs that are available. And also, veterinarians are working less. They're working less. They're not working 50, 60 hours a week. They're working 30, 35 hours a week. And so their full time is three and a half days a week. So people always ask, with all these new vet schools opening up, and there are now 30 vet schools, okay? There were 24 when I went to school. So there are 30, maybe now soon opening 31. Utah's going to have a vet school now. Arizona, which had none, now has two, which is great. We're seeing a lot more vet schools opening up. But the problem is, so there are more graduates. But because the work hours have shifted and the old-fashioned guys, as am I, sadly to say, right? So we're retiring. Most of my classmates, my clique, my really good close friends when I went to vet school are all retired. I'm the only one still working. Look, that's kind of weird. So we're seeing less man hours, and that's why there's a problem, the shortage. So what happens? These corporate practices are trying to make up the shortage by charging more, but they're not realizing that there comes a point where you're charging so much more that now the work stops. People aren't doing it. It frustrates the heck out of me. Love to know your experiences. And it's one of those things where I think it's hurting the profession. But when I say hurting the profession, what I really mean, it's hurting our pets. And it's hurting you because, yeah, I know it frustrates you. You don't want to not do something for your pet simply because he can't afford it. Now, if it's something philosophical, here's another one I hear. Speaking of cancer, I've had many, many, many clients over the years that have had a dog with cancer and actually went and treated. And whatever the response was, it's usually pretty good. We can buy time. But interestingly, and I hear this all the time, if, heaven forbid, their next pet gets cancer, they are not so willing to do all that stuff again. I mean, so what does it tell you? That we can do some good, but is it worth the cost? I don't mean the financial cost. I mean the cost to the animal. What happens to them during chemo? What happens to you when you're coming in a weekly on a regular basis, getting radiation, whatever? And you have to look at the big picture. And that's really kind of where we're at now. That big picture is not as joyous as I would like it to be. And I think part of it is because of corporate America. And it's really, it is crazy. It's sad. It really is. It's sad, but it's crazy. And let's put it this way. And I've told you about he's a friend now. He's a colleague now, but he started with me as a volunteer and then a tech. Went to Davis, very smart guy. And when I asked him, when I saw him a couple of years ago, the first time in front of a while at a trade show, at a conference, I said, oh my God, what are you doing now? And he said, well, I'm doing relief. I go, relief? I thought for sure by now you'd own a big practice somewhere. He's got the personality. He can have the financial backing. He's smart as can be. Why? He says, because he makes more money doing these relief shifts. This is the part that got me. And he doesn't have the headache or the responsibility of owning a practice. But I see something different about that. The joy, show of hands, how many moms out there? Okay, a lot of moms. If I ask you right now, who is your pediatrician? How many of you would not have an answer? Every one of you, high 90s percent, would say, oh, so-and-so. You'd have his name, tip of your fingers. But you know what's happening now in veterinary medicine? If I ask someone who's their vet, oh, I don't know. I go to that place on so-and-so and so-and-so. They're not bonding to a veterinarian. No one has that relationship with their vet anymore where they feel they can contact them anytime, where they really trust them. They're going to these places that people are coming in and out the door, 3-day week, work week, 2.5 days, 3.5 days, and you never see the same vet twice. I looked at a record some woman was sent to me after having some questionable experiences at this other animal hospital that was a corporate animal hospital. She was there 6 times. 6 visits, saw 5 different veterinarians. Where's the continuity? How do you not know when you walk in where the vet knows the pet, where the client knows the pet, the vet knows the pet and the client? I mean, that makes such a difference in the whole experience. And I think from just a medical standpoint, it's so much more important that your veterinarian knows your pet, knows what worked, knows what didn't work, doesn't have to sift through, 20 pages of file every time they see him to catch up on the case. It's their case. They know the pet. It drives me nuts. And unfortunately, that's what's happening. So what a downer, huh? Boy, I hear, sure, bright your day, it's a gorgeous day out here, and I'm ruining it for you. I'm so sorry, but it is frustrating. So you need to know this. I really do. You need to know, and I'm saying, right now, I told someone the other day, I don't give a darn about saying the right thing. No one's going to knock on my door and tell me that I can't do it or if I'm going to lose my job. My job is mine. And my clients, certainly, by now, they trust me pretty well. And that is, I don't like corporate practices. When clients ask me if I have to send them somewhere, the more corporate the practice, the more I'm going to say, don't go there. The only qualifier is some of the specialists that I recommend happen to be at some of these big corporate practices. And I don't want to not send my patient to the best. So sometimes that best is in one of these corporations and I have to send them there. And I do, I will. But generally, if I have an option, if there are 2 specialists, one is in a private specialty practice, one is in a smaller one that I believe still has heart, I will send you there. And as far as the biggies, I will not. I just don't like them. I don't like their philosophies. I don't like the fact that their doctors are young and inexperienced. These doctors are testing for things they shouldn't be testing for. It's just that they don't know. And what really bothers me, when you send a case to an emergency specialty practice sometime in the middle of the night, and there's no board certified specialist, emergency medicine, critical care specialist on shift at the same time, then why are you sending? I mean, you're going because you think it's the best and they have really good coverage. Oh, well, they're available on the phone. Oh, no, it's not the same. If you're going to have that kind of specialty practice, every single shift, even that midnight till 8 a.m. shift, has to have a board certified specialist on staff. And if not, then, that's a problem. And you need to know that, because then what happens is the young doctors, look, I don't fault them. They're young. You learn more in your first year and certainly 2 years out of veterinary school than you did in all of veterinary school. I know that. It takes time to get it. It's not their fault, but they're not ready. And what happens is when you get your internship, right? That's your first year out of vet school. You're going to learn a lot, but a lot of the interns, a lot of the doctors that are working those late night shifts are internists. They graduated last May or June, and now they're treating your animal in an emergency situation? Come on. So that's why I'm concerned, very much concerned. Okay, anyway, yes, I find them rude and cold. Yes, I do. Well, we talked about that. There's no passion. For them, it's a job. And I hear this all the time. And also, there's a lot to do with common sense and experience. Wisdom comes from knowledge and experience. These young kids have knowledge, 100%. They got into vet school. Some of them got into the best vet schools. So I know, oh, they're smart. And they graduated. It's not about smartness. It's about experience and wisdom. And how many things you can rule out, take off your list, at least take off for now, So you don't test for them because it just doesn't fit the history. It doesn't fit your physical. So it's most likely not a problem. And that dance, I always call it, it's a dance. To look at all that information, really put it together, that takes experience. It's a shame. All right. So for all of you out there, thank you for letting me sit on my soapbox. I'm loving it. But if you have any questions about any of this, you can always get a hold of me. I love when you contact me during the week, when we can have a discussion. So to me, it's all about that. And I'm going to make sure I answered everybody. Ivy Blue Eyed, hello. Shecky, Steve. Hey, Steve. Dog hates farmer's dog. Can I donate frozen packages to Value Vets? We don't do that, but I can put you in touch, absolutely, with some of the rescues I work with. And they would probably love it. So get a hold of me during the week and I'll put you in touch with some of the rescues. One thing rescues don't say no to, one of them is food. I just had someone donate several hundred beds that they had in a warehouse that they were unable to get rid of. And of course the rescues say yes. I really do think these young dogs have quotas. And of course they get paid, they get a salary. And sometimes that's what's called pro-sal. So it's performance and they look at both. They get a salary, but they also get a percentage of their own performance, their revenue. So you just never know. You never know. I think that is it. Slowly stops eating your food, burps a lot, this gas like doesn't feel well. Just as a vet run a GI panel, B12, pancreas, folate, in the meantime, won't there have dog food. So yeah, do me a favor and feel free to send me the results of those tests. They're running what's called the GI panel. Have you tried hydrolyzed protein or hydrolyzed antigen, HA or HP diets? I would recommend that. And maybe if we think there is an inflammatory component, and the only way you know that really is from biopsy, but sometimes I've worked with a board-certified internist, but we have on a very good ultrasound, and you see thickening, if the nodes aren't really involved, there's no other areas that look like it might be a lymphoma, we'll start putting them on something called budesonide or prednisolone or prednisone, because even if it was, you're still going to get some anti-inflammatory properties. The opponents of that say, if you start with them on pred and it is lymphoma, it will shrink it for a while. It does. It's going to help. But then when it comes back, it sort of comes back with a vengeance. They recommend doing an actual biopsy first. That is the Rolls Royce. But, you know, a really good Cadillac is to just start it and see what happens, assuming everything else on ultrasound is normal. So that's what I'd recommend. If you haven't done a really good ultrasound of the abdomen, that should be done before you think about anything. Let me know to wake in for over 4 months, darn freeze-dried raw. Okay, that's one of the problems, maybe. Move to the gently cooked farmer's dog just like before he's 2 weeks and then stops. Well, you know, it's hard to tell. Sometimes these dogs will get used to something for a short while and then they lose the satisfaction. It's a tough one. You might want to try like mirtazapine or entice. These are appetite stimulants. So if it's something to do with the taste of the food, then that's also 11-month-old mini Saputo. One thing to check, make sure they check the mouth well. I've seen so many still puppies, but way past the point that they should have any deciduous teeth in the mouth that still have deciduous teeth, and that provides discomfort. So make sure, take to your veterinarian, check the mouth. If there are any deciduous teeth in that mouth, they need to be pulled like ASAP. So that's one reason why you may not want to eat anymore. Now, you said no weight gain over 4 months, but has there been continued weight loss? That's also important. So freeze-dried raw should be okay if it's freeze-dried. And cooked farmer's dog should be all right. Maybe try adding some of these toppers, these gravy kind of toppers, and mixing them with the food. That might help a little bit also. And or it's just the dog, just you got to stay on top of it. But I would try, if the dog liked the farmer's dog and like the freeze-dried early on, maybe just try some appetite stimulant, entice, or mirtazapine. That could help. All right. I am hoping I got all to you, and I do appreciate your comments. If I missed anything, send me a note to Dr. Jeff at drjeff.com, Jeff at airbat.com, Dr. Jeff at petliferadio.com. A lot of ways to get a hold of me, and then I will mark it down and we'll talk about it next week. Or easy, come and join me next week. Same time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live, and we can go over it again and write down a little note that I missed it last week, so I'll get to it right away. All right, have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.